Now, we take you to the next concept. Since we started with the law of demand, other things being equal, that is an assumption. What if the things are not same? What if there are fundamental changes in the market? That makes us look at exceptions. Exceptions to the law of demand. The very first exception is expectation of future changes in price and speculation. If our consumers expect that in future prices will fall, property, interest rate. I want to take a car loan. I go to the bank and I ask them the rate of interest. They tell me at least you have to pay 9.5% rate of interest. I say okay, I'll decide and meet you later. The very next day, there is an article, a headline news in the newspaper which says the car loans, automobile loans interest rate likely to be cut down. What happens? The news flashes like a bolt of lightning on me and I say, wait, let me wait for the rates to come down. So even today, if the bank offers me the car loan at not 9.5 but 9%, I say, no, let me wait. So what happens? The law of demand fails. The law of demand proves to be invalid, which means that when people start expecting that in future prices will fall, the current demand will fall even if prices are falling. That means when the price is falling, the demand is also falling. And what is the law of demand? What is the law of demand? Inverse relation. If the price falls, the demand has to increase. But what's happening here? Even if the prices are falling, even if the rate of interest on car loans is falling, I'm not ready to take the loan now. And like me, n number of consumers, because we all want to wait for the best. Speculation, share market. Today the prices are falling of shares. And if tomorrow it is still going to fall further, even at falling prices, I will not buy more shares. Getting it? Usually what happens? When the price of share falls, I buy, and when the price rises, I sell. And I become rich. Again, it's based on a lot of calculations. So, what happens is that in case of future changes in price and things like speculation, hoarding, we always find that the law of demand proves to be invalid. We just have to keep one thing in mind. The inverse relation between price and demand, when it does not happen, when it does not take place, and in fact it's opposite, when the relation between price and demand becomes direct, then it makes us think of exceptions. The law also does not hold good when people expect prices to rise further. Even though prices have risen today, consumers will buy more because they think that in future prices will increase. Just the opposite of what I've explained. So same thing applies, that if today prices are rising and I expect tomorrow it will rise further, I will prefer to buy today even at rising prices. See, the whole concept is understand the relation between price and demand. There are two variables. Look at the movement of the variables. If the movement between price of the product and the demand of the product is direct, then it is exception. The second exception is Giffen's paradox. This concept has been introduced by Robert Giffen, Sir Robert Giffen. And Sir Robert Giffen was fully aware of law of demand, that when prices fall, demand will increase. But what happened in England, a very cheaper product was bread. People used to eat bread. And when the prices of bread started falling, he thought people will buy more bread. Demand for bread will increase. But he was shocked. The demand for bread did not increase. It failed to increase, even at falling prices. So that made him think, observe, and devise Giffen's paradox. In Giffen's paradox, what happens is, in low price products like bread, when the price falls, consumers use the money saved. They don't spend. They buy the same amount of bread. And they keep saving the money because now price has fallen. And then they increase their real income. So the concept of real income was introduced in Giffen's paradox. Here he is trying to say that when the price of any product falls, the very first is real income of the consumer goes up. You know what is real income? It is the purchasing power. If one loaf of bread is 10 rupees, or let's make it now currently 20 rupees, and the price comes down to 10 rupees, what happens? I used to spend 20 rupees and buy one loaf of bread. Today, when it becomes 10 rupees, I can buy two loaves of bread. Great, I can eat more and I can even give to others. But I will not do that as per Giffen's paradox. I will continue buying one loaf of bread and keep saving 10 rupees. So that one day, when I have saved enough of money, I will go and buy cake and eat. So, this is what Giffen's paradox is. That when the price of some low price product falls, people don't buy more and eat more. They save. And one day they substitute it. So the day they substitute it, the product has become Giffen for them. They don't want to see bread. They don't want to look at bread now. Correct? Dry fruits and groundnuts. Indian example. So, let me put groundnuts because I don't have so much money to buy dry fruits. So, I make something and I put groundnut in that. But the day the prices of groundnuts fall, I will keep saving. And one day I will buy some dry fruits, either walnuts or cashew nut or whatever. I know it's a long waiting time. But okay. Giffen's paradox will apply. The third is qualitative changes. We had discussed about quality as a determinant. If the price is taken as yardstick for quality, always higher the price, more the demand. Because you will find consumers associate quality with price. And they feel all those premium branded products are high priced because of high quality. That also, here also our law of demand fails. Price illusions does the same thing in a different language. People prefer to believe higher the price, better the product. So therefore, they always prefer to not buy low-priced products, but high-priced. Display of standard of living. How many of us prefer to show off, prefer to buy the most expensive watches, the most expensive shoes, the most expensive bag, now that American Tourister and all these VIP trolley bags. You go to the airport and you just look at the bags, the price, and you will realize display of standard of living. Higher the price, but still there is a demand. So these are all the cases where our law of demand fails. Well, now after understanding all about determinants of demand and the exceptions to the law of demand, we move ahead to the graphical presentation of the law of demand with relation to exceptions and determinants of demand. As you see here, the topic is movement along the demand curve versus shift of the demand curve. Now, what is a demand curve? It is a downward sloping graph, as you see in the next slide. Now, as you see that when we look at the demand curve is a typical downward sloping curve, indicating a negative relation between price and demand. In this slide, you can see that there are two demand curves, one in pink color and the other in black. The first one will be called as the old demand curve, and the next one, that is the black one, will be called as the new demand curve. Whenever students, there are two demand curves simultaneously drawn, you should consider it as increase in demand, and this increase is shown by right side shift to the demand curve. This right side shift of the demand is an indication that price is less, having a less influence, and there are many other factors which are directly influencing the demand. It can be due to taste, fashion, advertisement, income. So it happens that when people have more money, they will spend money on cars and luxurious products, which will bring a right-hand side shift on the demand curve. Look at this slide now. Here, we again have the two demand curve, but there is a left-hand side shift. Now, in this case, the black color demand curve will be our original demand, and the pink color will be the new demand. So, there is a shift to the left. Left side shift of the demand curve is called as decrease in demand, which can be due to any other factor except price. So, shift of the curve to the right indicates increase, to the left indicates decrease. But what about movement of the demand curve? If I want to show that with the fall in price, quantity demanded is changing, then I will use only one demand curve. And on the same demand curve, we can keep shifting it downwards. And I'm sorry, we don't have to use the word shift. We have to use the word movement. So when the price moves down, the quantity demanded moves to the right, downwards to the right, which will be called as extension. So what is extension of demand? It is the downward right side movement of the demand due to fall in price. And what if the demand is moving upwards towards the left? If the points are moving backwards, upwards towards the left, we call it as contraction. So students, there are four concepts to be remembered whenever you are graphically trying to understand or plot the demand changes, the demand movements on the demand curve. First, price as the only variable, like the law of demand, moving the demand downwards to the right, called as extension, backwards to the left, called as contraction. And any movement, any change to the right or left will be called as increase or decrease. So students, after understanding the movement versus shift of the demand curve, we are coming to the end part of this chapter, that is understanding how the demand for various products can be categorized into various groups. The very first that you see is dividing the products into two groups, durable and non-durable, and accordingly saying durable goods demand. All durable goods are those goods which can be stored. They are long life and they can be always be stocked for a long time. So there is not immediate market price fluctuation in case of durable goods because of long-term durability. Refrigerators to washing machines, furniture, cupboards, they are all classified as durable goods. Non-durable goods, the demand for these durable goods totally depends on the availability. Here you have to be very, very clear that suppose if the economy is going into a recession, then the demand for durable goods will drastically fall down and it will be difficult to sell them since there won't be customers coming ahead to buy it. Demands will be postponed and the stock of unsold stock inventories will keep piling up. So durable goods, if they are more in stock, their inventory is more, it is an indication that the market demand for durable goods is slowing down and people are not buying more of these goods. The next is non-durable goods. They are all those products which are perishable. Fruits, vegetables, to even products having a very short span of life. The battery cells, they all come under the perishable category. The demand for that keeps on changing with the customer's preferences, customer's income, prevailing conditions. And the biggest point is that the market price fluctuation in a very short period of time can be seen for perishable products. The next classification is long run versus short run. When we talk about short run demand, it is a demand which exists at a point of time. Today, when the market, share market opens, and at the end by 3:30 when it closes, the total number of shares purchased and sold will give us the short run demand. When we talk about long run demand, it exists over a long period of time. And the long run demand always changes with the population size, technology, long run variables, incomes of the consumers, changing government policies, etc. The third classification is direct and derived demand. When we talk about direct demand, what is direct demand? Direct demand is when the product is required for direct consumption. I buy something and I directly use it, it will meet my direct demand. So all consumer goods and services which are sold in the market meet the direct demand of the customers. Derived demand. Derived demand is the demand for all type of capital goods, raw materials, intermediate products, which are not directly purchased by the consumer. If I want a house, I will not buy the brick and the cement and then start building the house. Though people in rural areas do that. But just by buying the bricks and the cement, can I say that the demand, my house is built? So demand for raw materials, intermediate products are all considered as the derived demand. Here I would like you all to remember the demand for factors of production, land, labor, capital, organization come under derived demand. There is a very close connection between the direct and the derived demand. Whenever the demand for consumer goods goes up, the derived demand will also go up. If there are more houses in demand, automatically the demand for cement, steel, bricks, construction workers, engineers, architects will go up. The next concept is of complementary demand. These are those products which you have to buy jointly. Of course, people can have tea without sugar, coffee without milk, but there are certain complementary goods which always go together. You always go to a restaurant and sometimes you say, okay, you want to order a idli vada sambar. It's automatically coming into you The moment you say idli sambar, you know that there is a complimentary between the sambar and the idli. Okay, that chutney comes as free. No, we don't know which is free. Anyway, so when you discuss about these things, you are talking about products which always go together. Joint demand. I buy a cell phone, I need the network connectivity, I need the SIM card, and of course now memory card also comes along. So as times are changing, the number of complementary goods, I mean joint product demands, it means if one is absent, the product is of no use. If there's no SIM card in the mobile cannot function. You are getting it. So it's like if one is not available, the other is of no use. The next concept is cross demand. Cross demand is substitutes. They are competing brands. So when I talk about Samsung, Sony, Sansui, I put them under cross demand. When I talk of Bonvita, Horlicks, Complan, it's cross demand. When I talk of Fast Track, Police, Ray-Ban, I talk about cross demand. Cross demand are competing brands. We already discussed as a determinant. If one is not available, I pick up the substitute. If tea is not available, chalta hai. Let me, you know, go ahead with coffee. So this is how it moves on. If you miss the bus, you go by auto. So these are all the crossly demanded products moving around in the economy and in the market. The next is composite demand. Here we would like to bring those products which have the capacity to be used for alternative uses. So when I talk about electricity, there are multi-purposes of electricity. Water, multi-purposes of water. In fact, because a resource can be put for alternative uses, it becomes even more scarce. If I am using more of water for one purpose, I will definitely have less water for some other purpose. If I am using maximum of my time for one thing, I definitely have less time for the other thing. Opportunity cost. Resources are scarce. If you are putting in 7 hours of your day for entertainment, then you have very less time for study. Please remember there is an opportunity cost involved in every resource which is scarce and it can be put to alternative uses. If you are working for most hours of the day, then you have very less time for rest. Opportunity cost. The next category is industry demand and firm demand. Now, demand for medicines of Glaxo is firm demand. Glaxo is one pharmaceutical company. Cipla is another pharmaceutical company. But when we talk about the medicines of all these business firms together, it will constitute industry demand. So we say that our industry is a group of firms. So when I'm talking about the aviation sector, I'm talking of domestic flights. We have N number of players there, from Jet Airways to Indigo, SpiceJet, GoAir. They are all individual players. But they all together constitute the airline industry demand. So students, you have to be very clear that in a case of monopoly, single seller, there is no difference between firm demand and industry demand. But in case of perfect competition and other markets, we are always going to study separately industry demand and firm demand. So we have to remember the last concept with all this, that all the demand can be divided into market demand and segment demand. Fine? Segment, dividing the market demand into various categories based on villages, which can be done through mail, shopping complexes, which is a part of the market, how the distribution of product is taking place. There is a bulk of products which have to be distributed. Now when they are distributed through malls, through retail stores, through wholesalers, through mail order, these are the different ways of distributing the product to reach the customer. That makes market segments. But yes, market segments total give us the total market demand. So with that, we have covered most of the concepts which were revolving around consumer behavior, moving from demand to determinants of demand, law of demand, what are the exceptions to the law of demand, whenever you want to convert it into a graph, how does movement and shift in the demand take place, and finally, how does the demand for all the products get divided. So, goodbye and all the best.